How about now?
Good, you're on.
Okay, I called on my phone because my internet is sketchy and I don't want to lose it, but here I am. Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Rob, a grateful member of Al-Anon. Thank you for allowing me to share my experience of strength and hope. My talk will be in five segments. First, I'll try to give you a little pertinent family history. Second, living with my first qualifier. Third, how I got to Al-Anon. Fourth, living with my second qualifier. There's a long list of them. And fifth, what keeps me coming back. I'm the youngest of three children. My two sisters are 9 and 10 years older than me. So everyone in my family is from Chicago. I was later in Ohio. We moved progressively west because of my mother's debilitating rheumatoid arthritis, hoping warmer climate would make it easier on her. My mother was what seems an outdated term now, a housewife. She had her thyroid gland removed, as they did in the 30s and 40s. So she took thyroid supplements as well as managing her arthritis meds. After I was born, she could barely close the diaper pins. She was always frail, I remember. We moved to a new suburb of Walnut Creek when I was 4 in 1959. My father's new sales manager involved a lot of travel, wining and dining customers all over the country. I saw him on weekends. My father was a typical Midwest stoic man. I don't remember us saying we loved each other or hugged. There was minimal communication, and we went to church sometimes. It was formality on holidays, and it wasn't taken seriously in the house. My parents entertained friends and neighbors, and there was always alcohol in the house, although my mother rarely drank. By the time I was 10, my sisters had moved out, so I kind of felt like an only child. I got my share of wait till your dad comes home, but the punishment was usually just the waiting. I did not know anything about alcoholism growing up, and it never really felt like an issue. But I did realize last year that I have some behaviors of an adult child of an alcoholic. I'll take a deep dive at that in a future date, but I can see some of those traits as I write this thread. When I was 19, I was at a girlfriend's cabin in the Sierras having a conversation with her mother when I had an urge to call my mother. For a teenager, that would be odd enough, but I felt there was something urgent. My mom had gone to her condo in Tahoe, and she was going to take my young nephew. When there was no answer, I tried throughout the afternoon and in the evening. Eventually, I called my sister, the mother of my nephew, who lived nearby, and she told me, "Oh, it's okay. Don't worry." So I didn't. It was odd seeing my father home early from out of town and both my sister's cars in the driveway with every light on in the house. My mother had gone to Tahoe with just our dogs, canceling my nephew. She had apparently slipped and fallen in the shower alone. I was lost for a while. Being of stoic heritage, we were asked to suck it up. Any therapy looked like weakness. I just got accepted at UC Santa Barbara, and I lasted 1 year and flunked out. Back home, I got a job as a repo man, repossessing cars and trucks in the middle of the night for financial institutions. It was thrilling, and I had more money than sense. I got married for a year. I bought a motorcycle, took up hang gliding. I was a risk taker, addicted to excitement. It was sex, drugs, rock and roll. Now, you know, this wasn't going to end well. Indeed, I crashed my hang glider into a cliff, ending up in a hospital, breaking my arm, fracturing my jaw, eye socket, and skull, resulting in a major concussion. I was 25 and realized I had reached bottom. I had a death wish and needed to change my lifestyle. I went into management, started hiking and biking, and found pottery as my creative hobby. My biological alarm clock went off in the 80s when I met my second wife on a blind date weekend canoe trip with the pottery group. She had a 6-year-old daughter, and that sealed the deal. We soon got married, and I had an instant family. We had two more children right away. By the 90s, I was commuting 3 hours a day for work. We both had high-paying, high-pressure jobs. We always had that wine box in the fridge. Our youngest were in school a few years, and my spouse started suffering panic attacks that became debilitating. I didn't understand panic attacks. Hindsight being 2020, I wasn't really helpful or sympathetic. I thought it was in her mind, some fear or something. I did, however, push her to get some therapy with a psychiatrist. I thought talking through her problems with a professional would help because I certainly did not know how to help her. What resulted was a doctor that prescribed pills and little or no therapy. As a result of my forcing the answer, we now had Xanax and tranquilizer mixed in with alcohol. In hindsight, had I researched the difference between psychiatrist and psychologist at the time, I might have chosen differently. I will forgive myself for that. I started to learn about alcoholism and drug interactions because I was concerned with what I was seeing. When the tranquilizers are mixed with the wine, it increases the psycho with the psychotropic drugs like Xanax. I still had that hour and a half commute, 85 miles each way every day. I would sometimes call on the way home and hear that change in the voice when there was drinking and taking pills. I became afraid of what I would find when I got home. I stopped calling on the way home. On weekends, I would go to our children's games and other school events alone. I would make excuses to my children, friends, and family. She was tired. After a time, it became too much. I got angry with the therapist and my wife. I threatened, I pleaded, I bargained for the outcome I wanted. I did not yet understand that I was powerless. Fortunately, I called on my closest sister often for help. She told me I was codependent. I did not know what that was, and it did not sound good. She gave me a book that I read over and over. It gave me an awareness of what I was doing that was not helping. But I was still fretting a lot about the situation. During conversations with my wife at one point, I was told I was getting stronger and she was getting weaker. Apparently, it was the high-pressure job that was to blame. I agreed. Working full-time on top of getting children off to school and picking them up from our really good daycare, then figuring out dinner while I was gone 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. was too much. So I said, quit your job. I was making good money. We could relax, take the kids out of daycare. It was a win-win. It started off well with one additional child, then two, then a total of four. It got to be too much. I had to close the daycare because of her sleeping during the day. I made demands she get help. I threatened to send our son and daughter away for the summer. I finally followed through and had my brother-in-law pick up our children, brought them to my sister's house nearby. When I came home, she and the family dog were gone. I had a firm boundary, and unfortunately, the only currency I had was to negotiate was my loving children. But yikes, I guess I reinforced the situation now. She chose to stay with her mother in Southern California, and we did not see her for 3 months. I was still commuting 85 miles each way to work, and now was alone raising two middle schoolers. Our oldest daughter had moved out by then as a young adult. After 6 months sober with her mother, I agreed that she would come back. Things were so much better for about a year. About this time, my father-in-law lost his wife to an illness, and my spouse drove each day to Oakland to take care of him and then come home to sleep. She'd come home and be so exhausted and go right to bed. I was understanding until I found those little wine bottles in her purse. And there's probably drinking and driving. So after confronting her, she would spend the night with her father and come home on weekends. A few weekends later, I was served divorce papers. Suddenly, there was a fork in the road. She had a high-powered lawyer, and I had to lawyer up. So, Al-Anon entered my life by court order. Right off the bat, the courts insisted I go to Al-Anon and anger management, because I was so angry. My children had to attend Alateen, and my qualifier, as I learned was the term, was assigned AA. My daughter loved it. The boys were so cool and older, she could relate. My son, not so much. He hated it. I let him stop going after 6 months. After I sat quietly and listened to stories for a month or so, I started to hear more and more stories that sounded like me. I heard experiences about dealing with an alcoholic family member and how children were affected. I felt comfortable enough to share my thoughts and fears, and there was no judgment, just others relating to me. What kept me coming back then, besides the court order, was how I started to use what I was hearing. I didn't get a sponsor yet, but I did secretary meetings and I was a literature person, so I got to read everything. I say I got some of the program through osmosis. During mediation, when asked if we wanted to get back together, I had to make a really hard decision, an expensive decision. I decided that it was not in my nor my children's best interest. I had some clarity of thought having attended a few months of meetings. I did not see the same progress from the other side. Al-Anon would not save my marriage, but it saved me. Without the strength of the slogans and bits and pieces of the program with me, I have had a much harder time making decisions and coping. After an expensive divorce, I was given custody of our sixth and eighth grade children, and their mother was given visitation. I elected to keep the house for some stability for my children. I refinanced it to pay half of the equity. Marriage is grand. Divorce is 150 grand plus attorney fees. What I learned from Al-Anon was not to give up on what was important to me. I also found my hobbies again. I got back on my bicycle, working on my health. I would have my hips replaced 2 times each in the next dozen years. I'd stop making things in clay when I get married, so I took up ceramic classes again. I found that pottery centered me and kept me grounded, pun intended. I have been making things in clay and riding my bike ever since to keep my mental and physical health. Life as a single parent is very hard. I have a very special place in my heart for any single parent out there. I was somewhere every weekend between marching band and symphonic band, my son and daughter's basketball and softball and baseball. I had a new job closer to home, making things a little easier. Life was full and I was trying to date. My daughter had a sports injury in eighth grade and resulted in 5 surgeries and several years to correct. It was her introduction to opiates, and the doctors made sure that she had more than enough. As she got older, my daughter spent more time with her mother. Her mother got married to someone in AA, and that gift saved me $1,000 a month. My daughter's boyfriend was allowed to spend the night at her mother's house while in high school. My rigid boundaries were no match to her mother's lack of. My daughter moved out and in with her mother by sophomore year. By senior year, my daughter left the local school and went to a continuation school. By then, I was somewhat removed and did not see the addiction growing. I started getting panic attacks from my from my ex, and my daughter and her drugs. She showed me the aluminum foil and the burnt heroin in the pipes. My daughter had me wrapped around her finger, and I believed her denial of everything. She moved back in 2 more times, finally leaving the bedroom trashed. I did not have the benefit of going to regular Al-Anon meetings at that time. My ability to have boundaries was missing. My Al-Anon tools were not very sharp, and I let her take advantage of me. I have forgiven myself for that as well. I'm happy to say that I was successful dating. I got married over 3.5 years ago to a wonderful woman I met online. We have meshed our lives together and support each other amazingly. I have been fortunate enough to witness one of her son's recovery from the same drug addiction as my daughter. My daughter Qualifier was then moving to a Section 8 housing in Sycamore and Antioch with a new aimless boyfriend she could control. I knew the area well. I had repossessed many vehicles from that street. Even I knew that was not going to work out well. So I came back to Al-Anon 3 years ago last month. I wrote on the sign-in sheet that I needed a sponsor and was told by my sponsor I looked a little frightened. I was approached that night and after the meeting by an amazing person who entered my life. I was able to navigate what was to come with program. I had a sponsor who lovingly led me through the steps, and I was able to actually find my higher power. Now, remember, I felt something when my mom died. I know my mother reached out to me. How do I explain this? I have turned my back on religion and feel that I'm an atheist. I'm a bit of a science nerd, and I have read about this in quantum physics. There's a phenomenon called quantum superposition. Way oversimplified, this is where a particle of quantum mechanics, a principle of quantum mechanics suggests that a particle can exist in 2 separate states or locations at the same time. My mother contacted me over space-time is my higher power on display. Science and my mother reaching out to me in her time of need has proven my higher power's existence. And at the same time, puts my prayers for others in perspective. I just may have an impact. I tried intervention with my daughter once, with my new stepson, who is the gift of the program. And that was it. I detached with love and worked with my sponsor and came to meetings. I was praying for that soft landing for my daughter. She would get arrested or something, and she'd realize that she needs help, and that'll change her. I would let it play out. I would continue to work on my program and lead by example. My daughter, however, was not wearing her seatbelt when her new boyfriend swerved unexpectedly, rolling the Jeep on Highway 4. She was thrown out of the vehicle. It was Father's Day 2 years ago when I got the call. She was on life support with a section of her skull removed to allow her brain to swell. I was unusually calm seeing her there, connected to all the machines. I listened to the doctors and nurses and tried to absorb it all. There was nothing I could do but hand it over to my higher power. But here's the thing. My daughter was the same age I was and in the same hospital I was with a traumatic head injury as a life-changing experience. Wow. I was grateful that I had just finished step three with my sponsor before the accident. The Kafka-esque nightmare continued. My oldest daughter lost her baby, my first granddaughter, 1 week after the accident. Mm. How much pain and loss can one endure? My higher power took on a lot of responsibility. My sponsor was the voice of reason and the gift I cannot overemphasize. After a few months, her memory came back and became higher functioning. I took off work family leave to care for her when she came home from the hospital. She was stronger, and we went to the doctor and therapy sessions. It became time to have her skull piece returned, so she did not have to wear the helmet 24/7. The doctor supplied very powerful opiates after the surgery, and she was genuinely in pain. When she returned home after a month in the hospital, the addiction had returned. The skull piece was removed again a short time later because her body rejected it, possibly. As her cognitive powers continued to return, issues arose with regard to control of pills. She wanted to control and abuse the meds. She elected to move to her friend's dysfunctional household. She was 25. I was powerless to keep her there. Her addiction grew until her doctor told her that he will never replace her skull and she can just go through life with a helmet. It was Ellen on tools like prayer, talking to my sponsor, and slogans like letting go, letting God take control that helped. At meetings, I would be asked how I was. That care and love of the group was comforting and reassuring. It wasn't easy by any means, but I got through it. Ellen did not remove the pain I experienced. It helped me remove suffering. I grieve upon occasion. Ellen has not made me numb. I can feel and experience life, and I can control how I act. Fast forward, both my daughters are doing well. My youngest realized having part of her skull missing forever was her bottom. She got sober and had the surgery to replace it with a plastic prosthetic. It was successful. She has 20 months of sobriety now and has 3 sponsees. The state offered her free college, and as of the first quarter, straight A's going for a sociology degree. My oldest daughter is working through her loss with her daughters, loss of her daughter together with her husband, and they are stronger today. My son, less dramatically, is on his own program and has continued his passion for music. So what keeps me coming back? I don't have a court order. Who am I fooling? I need the program as much as ever. I'm married during a pandemic shutdown, during political and social unrest, and impending global environment worries. I have plenty to fear. And with program reminders, I can be in charge of my reactions and keep healthy boundaries. I have also experienced being away from the program and having life sneak up on me when I was less prepared. I must say that having actually done the steps this time, the most powerful force that keeps me coming back now is service, step 12. Helping with the previous day in Al-Anon was very rewarding for me. More important, yes. More importantly, being a sponsor keeps me coming back. My sponsee keeps me in the game. I get to work the steps again and see how the piece of the program works for somebody else. If you have an opportunity to sponsor, I recommend it. If you're willing, I wasn't even done with the 12 steps yet, and I became a sponsor. How rewarding that decision was for me. So I may miss a few meetings here and there, and my wife and I are both retired now. Our marriage is stronger. Our life is more abundant than we can imagine. But I will keep coming back. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. And I'd like to thank all three of our speakers.